This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joy podcast from LGBTQIA+ community radio station Joy 94.9. For more information and tons of other podcasts, head to joy.org.au.
Yes, he does. And we have our next guest in the studio with us. We have Daniel Schlosser, who is coming in to chat to us about Hercules, which we mentioned.
Hercules? I've heard it. You know, like the
little known story, yeah. Hercules.
Well, maybe not a little known story from what we're gathering.
Yeah. There's a lot more to the story than we realised, and this sounds like a really interesting take on it. So, Daniel, welcome to the show. Thank you for coming on.
It's great to be here.
And before we get started about the show, which is happening at Arts House, could you tell us a little bit about your background for anyone that's not familiar with you and your work?
Sure. My background, I was born a theatre director. I came straight from Zeus's forehead.
You weren't an actor first?
I wasn't an actor first.
That's rare.
It is, and since then I've performed a little bit often with very specific groups like The Rabble. We've made about 4 or 5 shows together and, sort of select projects. We did the Belarusian Free Theatre when they were here a couple of festivals ago. But no, I was directing from the get-go and... started a fringe company. In fact, we made our first show in what were the fringe offices in Brunswick Street, while the fringe was still very wild. we've been making work with this ensemble for about a decade, or certainly maybe, let me count, probably about 10 shows.
Right.
And that's a fairly loose ensemble. The creative teams, the design teams, tend to be quite regular. There's people I've worked with there a lot. And then the actors, varying degrees of experience. Edwina Wren, who's one of the performers of this one, is now clocking 8 shows together.
So wow.
It's starting to get deep. Yeah.
Now, you actually credit the actors along with the design team as the writers of this. Why?
Well... simply put, they do bring a lot of material into the room that we end up using in the show. That's the short answer.
So you come up with the idea, the concept, and then they run with it? Or you all run with it?
It's a very... on one level, we're just correcting the balance. I mean, theatre is always made by groups. And any director-writer who claims autonomous genius is tending to forget that, you know, even the so-called great writers depended on... splendid actors in the first instance to make it work and muscle it into shape and make suggestions. And so it's about credit where credit's due.
Yeah, because so many writers, sit in on rehearsals and changing on a daily basis, don't they?
Yeah, and I think with this we do have a pretty unusual methodology. So it's a situation where I kind of create a room, we create a space for the designers, often start work even on sound design as sort of elements in that room, and then the actors work with improvisation. They often take an idea, or sometimes they'll take a text, but more often than not, they'll just start talking about their day or their weekend or their, you know, whatever, and we'll work from that material, and sometimes that material stays in the room. There's lots of sort of anecdotal low talking in the show, and then sometimes I'll charge in with a big chunk of something that comes straight from Euripides or another source. There's a bunch of different sources in the show.
Right.
So, they'll respond to that. And I kind of get to write on top of them as well as they're working. So it's very give and take and kind of it's a very organic process.
Right.
So doing this kind of devised work, if it could be called that, how long does that actually take in the sort of pre-production stage before you actually get to putting the show on?
That's very dependent on the source and how close we intend to keep to the source. So the last show we made was in Sydney. It was an adaptation of a novel called They Divided the Sky, an East German text, sort of Cold War, fall of the Berlin Wall, that sort of thing. And we were really wanting to tell that story from that book. And it was a two-hander, and we sort of very methodically worked through that kind of structure. It gave us a structure, it gave us a shape and content. With something like this, which is much more like M plus M, which was the last thing we did in Melbourne quite a while ago now, it's almost impossible to imagine doing the source text. You know, I've been always fascinated by the plays that can't be staged, the Peer Gynts and the,
okay,
you know, the sort of texts that people think, oh, this sort of doesn't quite fit in the canon somehow. And Hercules as a source text, it's The Madness of Hercules by Euripides, is one of those. People don't do it. Nobody really knows it. It's kind of way back there in the classical literature canon. And there's good reasons for that. It's really, it's flawed in many ways as a text. So in a way that helps us. It gives us an opening and we kind of can start to deconstruct it. So it varies a lot. But this one is particularly turning into a theatre show that is definitely not that play.
Yeah.
It's definitely dealing with that play and it's dealing with the issues that play raises, but it's much more about a contemporary situation, and these three women are, you know, struggling with all kinds of conditions that we do as people right now, but also, you know, they're trying to work out how this text connects to them and whether they want to tell a story that is kind of so intensely patriarchal and sort of foundational in terms of its male violence.
All right. Well, who is Hercules? You know, like for the, you know, because we all know the name, but do we really remember? You know, like I sort of have forgotten, I think, along the way. Because, you know, you don't really hear the name very often, do you?
No, and I love this too. You've got a sort of vague image of maybe the club and the lion skin cape or something. And I mean, I read The Twelve Labours when I was 9 or 10 or something in one of those lovely, you know, kind of Greek myths for boys or something, you know. But so it stuck with me a little bit. But certainly he is a figure that for a long time was a byword for not just his strength and amazing feats, sort of demigod feats, but also in those original stories, he's charming and he's funny. And he's amused and he's a very complex character.
Now, so where did it come from? You know, what's its original stories? Where did it all happen?
You mean the Euripides story is the Greek myths? I mean, it's in that constellation of figures that include Medea and I mean, I'm just trying to, off the top of my head, think if many of them deal with such mythical figures. It's more, you tend to get more historical plays in those. I could be wrong. Gosh, my classical learning is really fading me now, fading at the moment. But it's kind of, we still need the Hercules figure in our stories, but he has kind of vanished. So for a while there, Conan was kind of our Hercules, you know, sort of impossibly strong, carved by nature, you know. And I think that idea has filtered into hold a lot of different figures in that kind of pop culture.
Yeah.
Originally, or in the text, I think he is a kind of... The most interesting for us is that he is... he's up against that old... conundrum dilemma or tragic dilemma of being fated to both be a hero and liberator and savior and to civilize the world. That's what the 12 labors is really about, killing these monstrous, wonderful, mythical creatures left, right and center. It's an environmental catastrophe all over. but he's fated in this play to kill his own family. It's the turn of that fate, okay. And it's about amor fati, this idea that
But was there a reason, the killing of the family?
Depends who you read.
Right.
Euripides has the kind of embodiment of madness arrive, which is a revenge story that peppers those stories where Hera, who is the wife of Zeus, is forever punishing the various, sons and daughters that Zeus has had by infidelities with mortal women. That's her kind of through line. And so in this particular text, she sends madness down. At the moment of his liberating everyone from a tyrant, it flips on a dime and he loses his mind and murders his family. And it's the sort of thing you can imagine that someone like Seneca kind of turns around and turns it into a thing about, he hasn't followed the purification rituals properly. He hasn't done the right things that you come back from war, essentially, come back from that kind of blood-soaked madness. You need somehow to transition back into the domestic and the society, and he fails at that point to do it properly. And I think that's suddenly very contemporary.
Yeah. That sounds particularly interesting, as you say, as a contemporary piece, and just as relevant as ever. I'm really interested in the sort of themes in it around what we would now kind of look at as some kind of trauma and then what we would probably classify as domestic violence these days. So how have you taken the text and either modernised it or transformed it?
Yeah, we are... The bad news is,
as he laughs.
Great. Yeah, well,
I should preface this by saying it's a completely bonkers production. I mean, it is crazed. It's wonderful. It's theatrical.
It's sort of like a
Jungian dream interpretation that's gone completely AWOL in a sort of funhouse. But just to preface the statement that we've doubled down on it, we've kind of said, okay, this story is already unwatchable in a sense and unthinkable. Mm. And then we've put across the top an idea. It's very faint, but it's an idea of, this sort of phenomenon in America, the school shootings, that kind of grief.
Oh, okay. Mm.
And it just brings us in proximity to something right. as unthinkable that we not experienced, thank God, in this country, but we feel that very strongly. Mm. So there's this sort of parallel lines.
Well, we're shocked by it. We're shocked by what
we are shocked.
Yeah, here in Australia.
I think that's exactly the point. Mm. You read a play by Euripides, or you think you're going to play by Euripides, or any, ancient playwright, and even the shock of that is already softened. It's like, oh, well, I'm going to hear a bad story about gods and whatever. Whereas we really wanted to make an event that kind of refreshed that horror, but also it really looks at the aftermath. It doesn't deal so much with the realities of... there is no male figure on stage. It's the three women. They embody sometimes. But it's much more about things like grief and healing and how you need to tell stories sometimes to get through those moments. And then we're kind of, I guess in a way, we're concluding that the Hercules story as such is so problematic to have at the foundation of our culture. And you're absolutely right. I mean, that does spin out into contemporary situations where anywhere where a policeman or someone in the army, or they're exactly the Hercules figures because they're there to protect us.
Mm.
But then when things go wrong, it's the antithesis. Yep. It's a horrible kind of reversal. Mm.
How are you staging it? Because you said that design is just as important as well. What are you doing here?
Well, we're starting with a very naturalistic proposition. It's actually set in a kindergarten room, and the three women start as teachers in that space. It gets, as I say, pretty nutty pretty quickly as their sort of their grief, their anger, their sense of humour, all of these things kind of start manifesting in the room in very quite surrealist sort of, it's a little bit Korean horror, it's a little bit sort of puppety, gestures and a sort of creeping unease that develops. And then the set, exactly, I can't give you away the secrets, but it really does this sort of magnificent transformations that I think speak to our ability to change. Yeah. And that's a big theme right now. I think a lot of people need a sense that something, we're returning to so many points, if it's Roe versus Wade or if it's the war in the Ukraine, it's like this sense that, oh my gosh, we're not going forward and we have to be going faster forward than ever before, but we seem to be keeping dragging back. So we're trying to buck that somehow.
The thing is that we saw this 60 years ago with Hitler, what's going on in the Ukraine right now. So it's just history just repeating itself, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which is the other interesting side of what's happening in the world right now.
Yeah, that's spot on. And that kind of optimism that followed the Second World War, when you had the UN created and you had people, the President of the United States saying, we will make sure this never happens again.
Mm.
Of course, it wasn't just now that was betrayed, talk to Vietnam or Korea. But I think the theme of the wheel turns is very Greek. It's that's also a foundational idea that, you know, human nature is a constant, and it's always a fight to to bring it back to a sort of good version of that. The bad is always there.
But the interesting thing is that the Greek, you know, that wonderful, you know, like era of Greek mythology is just, it's there always. It's like the Bible. It's it's never goes away. It's we're, you know, fascinated by it, and we learn so much from it as well each time around, and we can twist it and make it a little bit different, like you guys are doing with Hercules here.
That's right, and the people who know nothing about Hercules are still, you know, something is still referred to as a Herculean labor. You know, so you have sort of these traces in the language that show you that it's really there. That's
what, the amount of terminology we use from Greek mythology is staggering. I mean, it's absolutely staggering.
They're foundational stories. Like pretty much any story you tell these days has the same kind of
and
peaks and troughs. And
how old they are.
Yeah, you know, like, human nature, unfortunately, or fortunately, doesn't change.
repeating itself,
That's right.
Fantastic. It sounds absolutely, as you said, bonkers.
Yeah.
But interesting. And interesting that, you know, like, as I said, the top of this interview is that, you know, I really don't know who Hercules is, but now all of a sudden I have a better understanding. But it's good to be reminded.
That's true too. And one of the very first questions I had when I read it, which was a complete accident on a holiday somewhere, you know, I thought, oh gosh, I've never read this play. And why is this play so ignored? Why is Medea so well known? She kills her children. It's a taboo in our society. But the guy version, why is that? Why has it been kind of sidelined? You know, I think this needs excavation. And and we just, I think we're adding to that a kind of sense of, theatre is a place where you might find some grace, or find a transformation from the grief and the trauma of it into a space that is maybe not has all the answers, but is a poetic response, which has a kind of I use the word beauty, but it's more than that. It's like if you can make something beautiful, you can kind of master the darkness in a way, I think.
And it's playing at the Arts House in North Melbourne, Town Hall. Yeah. Do you want to answer this if you don't want to? How are we as an audience viewing it? Is it in the surround? How are you staging it?
No, it's unusually traditional sort of boxed set for me. It's sort of beautifully designed, but a regular arrangement. The perspectives of it are very, very cunningly designed. So
I'm guessing as you keep on talking about the design, how unfolds, that plays a big part.
Yeah, and the sort of the way that a theatre space might do those things that sometimes film does so beautifully, and you can't be film, but you can sort of find equivalents of some of those tropes, and we're playing with that a lot. And we're in the Arts House, which is one of those great COVID stories. We've been delayed twice, and the project has therefore been in more developments than we planned.
And we were speaking to somebody earlier on the show that the same thing happened, but they've developed it even more. Has that happened with you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We've come to a completely different show by the time we've had 2 extra years. And also really noteworthy is that, from myself down, there's just this, it's kind of like a rebirth of sorts. I mean, you're so happy to be there doing what you do, having been deprived of it. It just, I think everybody's creativity and enthusiasm for the basic task is absolutely not something you could have generated outside of that context, which is, I mean, I'm trying to see some good in the bad there too, but
Well, you're here now, which is fantastic.
That's right.
As we said, it's at the Arts House in North Melbourne. I find it you know, like the most fascinating part of the world, North Melbourne, is that, you know, the beautiful wide streets and the beautiful old architecture and so many people live there. But when you're actually on the street, there's hardly anyone there's no on one the there. Street. It's the most bizarre place. And I have friends that live around the corner from the town hall. And I go over there and all the restaurants and cafes and all that are full. But there's no one on the street. Bizarre. Yeah. And when's it on?
We open Tuesday week. That's the 24th, I believe. Yep. And we only run for 5 shows.
Yep.
It's a standard arts house season. At 7:30, I think it is. The Saturday is a 6 o'clock show, which is a little bit odd.
What's it called again?
Hercules.
Oh, what a tease, Hercules. David.
Very good.
I've heard of him.
I was going to do it. But yeah, no, we've been very lucky to have them produce it because they have stuck with it over all this time.
Yep.
and found ways to resource it.
Yep.
Even when we'd spent the original money, it was we had to keep it to flow.
Yeah.
But they've also let me, as I say, completely reimagine the world that we wanted to make, and now here we are.
Lovely meeting you, and awesome. Sounds fascinating. As you said, bonkers is the word.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. Thank you for coming in.
Brilliant. It's a great pleasure.
We've been talking to Daniel Schlusser about Hercules, which is going to be on at the Arts House starting on Tuesday 24th. So jump onto theartshouse.com.au to have a look at tickets. You're listening to The Joy Sunday Arts Magazine 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community radio station, Joy 94.9. For more podcasts or to support Joy by becoming a member, donating or subscribing, head to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.